I'd like to call the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability to order. We'd like to have the clerk, ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Burke, Senator Kaler, Co-Chair Moffitt.
Here.
Senator Murphy, Representative Nekris, yes. Representative Poe, yes. Representative Riley, Senator Rose, Senator Staines, yes. Senator Severson, yes. Co-Chair Trotter, yes. Representative Eunice, yes. With eight in attendance.
Thank you. Eight in attendance, and we have a quorum. Thank everyone for your attendance and your participation. Co-Chair Senator Trotter, opening comments.
We have a pretty long agenda today, and as I look in the room, I see we also have some long-winded people as well. So it's a bad combination. So if we could try to keep our comments pretty succinct, go forward, and we should move right along.
Thank you, Senator. I believe you were real clear on some thoughts and expectations and, shall I say, direction. Item number two, overview of the FY 2016 Group Insurance Program, CMS. I'd like to call you up for your presentation. And if asked, could you make any introductions?
Good morning. I'm Tom Terrell, the Acting Director of CMS. I've had the opportunity to meet most of you. Although I'm new to the job, we'll try to answer the questions as best we can this morning. I did bring a few decades worth of experience with me to provide some assistance. Marcia Armstrong, to my right, is our interim COO and a veteran of the Group Health Insurance Program. And Pam Kogler, to my left, is the Director of the Benefits Bureau at CMS. Additionally, Karen Pape is here, our Chief Financial Officer. Kim McCullough and Marcus Veeley are the two Assistant Directors for CMS. And Wendy Butler, our Legislative Affairs Liaison. As you can see in the report, we have a very aggressive target. $700 million per year for the group to reduce costs of the group health insurance program. To get there, we have a short-term and a longer-term approach, all of which involves manipulation of cost-sharing between the employees and the employer. We also have to recognize that we are in the midst of collective bargaining, and we don't know the outcome of that. What the outcome of the bargaining sessions will be with our 34 units, but we made some assumptions, and we believe that the target that we have, although aggressive, is achievable. So subject to your questions, that's our approach on pulling the cost out of the health insurance program for next year.
Thank you, Mr. Director. I would like to ask that add Senator Matt Murphy to the attendance. Okay, go ahead with.
We're ready for your questions, sir.
Do any members have questions now to direct the CMS?
Yeah, Director, just a question. The discussions about the proposed $700 million or so in savings that you need to be looking at. What are you realistically looking at? Are there some, I mean, that's a significant number that wouldn't that have to be bargained to get to reach those kinds of savings?
Well, yes. We are a partner in this. There will have to be an agreement in collective bargaining. The number that the approach that we use to get to that number is the manipulation of premiums in the near term, and in the longer term, it's a look at plan redesign. And I'll let Marcia address the details, but essentially the bottom line is that for FY16, we have to make some assumptions. One is that we're going to get have some success with our collective bargaining, and that it's going to come in an earlier rather than later agreement, because we just start to run out of time as the year goes on to achieve the savings that we might want to achieve. So the fundamental reality is that, on average, our employees are paying 17% of the premium now, and their contribution would probably go up to something on the order of 40% of the premium. Marcia?
Which that would have to be, you're saying that would have to be bargained to make that change?
Yes, we would want to make that part of our agreement.
Okay. And when would that, but the bargaining is not going to be probably done by the time we reach time to pass this budget, though. So what happens then?
We have to continue as is.
As is.
Okay. And that's the number that you'll see reflected in the report, and that's why the backlog continues to grow, because we can't take advantage of, we can't claim any savings that we haven't got an agreement on.
So if you don't have an agreement yet, you would the $700 million would be, you'd still look to save the $700 million by doing a, by increasing the backlog of payments?
Well, we believe we'll get an agreement sooner than later. That's one of the fundamental assumptions. If we are not successful there, then we would have to look elsewhere in the state budget to find those savings.
Okay.
At the end of the day, it's a $6 billion hole, as you know, that we're trying to help fill.
Okay. So that wouldn't be, so at this point, you're not planning any other, outside of bargaining, there's no other changes planned except for the potential of payment. You don't have any authority to make any other changes besides?
We would have to manipulate the premium contribution percentage on the part of our employees in the near term in FY16. Anything else that we would do other than that front-end manipulation would require a new procurement action, potentially new vendors, new agreements, and a plan redesign. The lead time that's required in order to implement a plan redesign would not be effective in FY16. So we would be asking for an agreement that embraces both opportunities, an FY16 premium or co-payment shift, and followed by an FY17 and later plan redesign that we would have time to implement that could reduce costs potentially for everyone. All of these mechanisms move costs around. They shift costs from employer to employee, that no matter what approach we use. The real opportunity for us in the long term to manage our health care costs is to try to negotiate the rates down to get a better deal, and to have a healthier population. So that will also be part of our ongoing program, and there are a number of things that we're looking at and having people help us with some real cutting-edge stuff that we might implement over the long term that will help to stabilize the cost increase or perhaps even reduce cost if we can negotiate better rates. But everything is on the table right now. Just the reality of it is, in order to achieve the savings that we must achieve in the near term, there's only a limited number of things you can do.
Okay, so just to make clear then, what you're not required, if negotiations aren't done yet, there's not going to be any dramatic changes that you're going to do until after negotiations are done. But is that $700 million then going to be still part of that? Is it going to be built into the payment cycle delay, or are you just going to be looking for additional funding in the budget to make up for that if negotiations aren't done?
Well, we would not be looking for a supplemental, if that's the question. What we would look for is other places in the budget that we could achieve the savings in. But we believe that this is achievable. We think we can get an earlier agreement than later, and that if we do that, then the numbers do work. It's not impossible for us to recognize the savings that we're targeting in FY16. Admittedly, it has to come together in a certain way, and perhaps with unprecedented speed and with unprecedented collaboration. But that's where we are.
You finished, Senator Severson? Okay. Before we go to any other questions, and other members I'm sure have some, just a personal comment, only speaking for myself, but Director, I am not agreeing to anything that's a manipulated figure. I've heard you use that term several times. I think it'd be better to say, speaking just for myself, we're trying to adjust figures, I think we're all trying to, interested in the same thing, but I think to refer to it as manipulated is giving the wrong impression, at least in terms of what I'm thinking. So just food for thought. Other members seeking to ask questions? Senator Staines.
Welcome, Director, and congratulations on your new role. So I just want, just to follow up on Senator Severson, you know, as we are putting together a budget, you sort of talk about how realistic is it to actually try to bank on $700 million in savings from group health in fiscal year 16. You know, as you were discussing, I mean, this is based on negotiations with labor unions, with the labor unions. When are those historically, how long have those taken, and when have they come to an agreement with these, in those negotiations? What's usually the time frame on these?
The, I might have to have my team answer part of that, but, and let me just back up to what Representative Moffitt said. Let me just use, I'll just use the cost-sharing ratio. I think that's a clearer, way to put what we have in mind. It's nothing, not a sinister, manipulation of
and Director, excuse me, I didn't mean to imply that, but I just think the impression, speaking just for myself, would be better to not refer to manipulating.
Yeah. And in point of fact, it's clear to say that
we
would
adjust
the cost-sharing ratio between the employee and the employer. In the past, my understanding is particularly the last session went several months beyond the expiration of the agreement. We're presuming success. We are negotiating vigorously. We have put a lot of days in at the table, but we will have a lot of days scheduled at the table between now and the end of the year. They're negotiating this week, and we are presuming that we will get an agreement.
And did I understand correctly from what you were saying, if you have to adjust the premiums to account to get to the $700 million in savings, you would have to go from 17%, employee paying 17% up to 40%?
On average. And let me just, if I can have Marcia expand on that just a little bit.
Well, as the director mentioned, Marcia Armstrong, CMS Interim Chief Operating Officer. As the director mentioned, we have longer term goals where we've got an 18 to 20 more 4 month time frame. Those items include things like specialty networks, looking at carve outs, incentives, value based benefits. So our goal is to achieve shorter term savings through adjustment of premium while continuing to work with the union through a collaborative effort to bring our overall liabilities down. And as we bring those overall liabilities down, we would be able to also reduce the associated premium costs.
Is it fair to say that the ways that you might try to redesign the plan to bring those long-term costs down is going to take ramp-up time? I mean, first you have to get to an agreement, and then there's implementation time.
I also would like to mention...
The new fiscal year starts January 1st. I mean, July 1st. Yeah, July 1st. I mean, what am I missing here? I just don't see how you're actually going to be getting these kinds of things ramped up, agreed to, and in place starting July 1st.
We have already achieved $133 million in savings from the time that we originally forecast our budget and working with the governor's office. We have renegotiated our HMO rates. We've saved $22 million. We've reduced our vision plan and saved over $3 million. Through our ongoing cost management initiatives and things that we achieved during our last round of negotiations, our liabilities have trended down $60 million. That's in looking at our claims data. One challenge that we have is that since our payment cycle is delayed, they don't really release our claims data to us until after we pay the bill. So So in some cases, when we're forecasting, we're looking at 18-month-old data. So as we work forward, we have dynamic models that update with our claims data quarterly. And so our overall liabilities are actually trending down due to things that we've implemented already on an ongoing basis. We also have we are going back to leverage other state funds through collection of owed revenues from the money that we lost from the retiree pension contribution. We had taken that out of our rates because by law we have to take it out when it's legal at that time, even though we knew there was a pending lawsuit. So now that we know that we need to refund that money, we have increased our other fund rates to compensate to ensure that GRF doesn't pick up that burden. So that's $27 million. So that's one time only. That won't be in our base. We also have a dependent eligibility audit. We're doing our stage 3 and 4 that we had delayed. We had asked for IRS transcripts for the taxes, and it was a point of contention with our members. So going forward, we're just going to ask for a copy of their tax return to make it easier on them, but we will be moving forward with that beginning in July. That's forecast at about $9 million to $10 million.
Is this all data information that you can share with the
yes.
CASA committee? That'd be helpful. I mean, and you know, in terms of thinking about putting together a budget for next year, I'm presuming that you don't want to be adding to our unfunded backlog of bills that are owed here in group health. So getting realistic what we think we can actually achieve for next year, I assume would be in everyone's interest here, and making sure that we don't build a budget that's just going to add to our backlog of bills. Would that be a shared goal?
Yes, and we'll come back to you. Actually, today I think we're getting an updated presentation deck that we've been using to help us all understand the narrative and the dynamic of moving the numbers around and what this cost adjustment's going to mean. But I wanted Marcia just to elaborate, because there are a number of other things that we're doing that are ongoing beyond the shifting of premiums to attack the overall number. The other thing I would mention is that, and we just don't know the answer to this because the data hasn't come back, but there is a component of savings opportunity that we're not able to address at the moment, and that is the migration of our employee population from a more expensive to a less expensive plan. There have been some experiences in the private sector and in large corporations in the public sector that we would like to understand about when you do this, how many people actually drop from a more expensive program to a less expensive program because it's in their best interest to do so. And then this year we have to add, pursuant to the Affordable Care Act, we have to add a 60% plan or a baseline bronze plan. If a lot of our younger, healthier population drops to that plan, that will represent an opportunity to reduce our overall liability as well. So that migration number is not in our figures yet. And we hope to be able to get an imputed benefit from that as soon as we're comfortable with presenting to you what the other experiences have been in corporate America and in the public sector. So there are a number of things beyond just the adjustment of premium sharing that we're doing to try to get to $700 million. We do have, and it's a wonderfully pragmatic question, and we do have a four-month ramp-up built into our calculation, but it does presume a July 1st agreement.
Right. So, I appreciate the fact that you're building this on some optimistic assumptions, but I do think that that's optimistic view, and, you know, in terms of trying to get a budget passed before then, we need to understand what we think realistically we're going to achieve here if we don't, in fact, want to be adding to our backlog, which, you know, if that's a shared goal, that would be just very helpful information to be getting at some point. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And would the clerk please add Representative Kelly Burke to the attendance? Other members seeking recognition? Co-chair, Senator Trotter.
Thank you very much. I have a few questions just from the previous comments. Seemingly that your backlog of payments is going to increase in the coming years. Do you know what the current hold, your claims hold value is?
Currently for the state employees program, it's about $1.4 billion.
Okay. And you see it growing as well?
anything that we don't achieve in those savings, if we cannot work with the governor's office to identify funding from the overall state budget, potentially it could go up. We do see it go down throughout the course of the year due to cash flow, but we can also work with our vendor payment program to mitigate some of the effect out to our vendors, so we can work with them a bit to alleviate the HMO payments and free up money for our self-insurance program. So that's a tool that we can use as well to make it more transparent to our vendors.
Okay. And speaking of the vendor payment program, can you explain specifically how that works, and is it a bidded process going forward, and what kind of savings do you see with this program, and how fast?
I'm not the expert on the program, but I can tell you that it's not a contractual arrangement with CMS. It's they work directly with the vendors to assign debt, and it doesn't necessarily cost us money or save us money. It's the same interest rates as under the Prompt Payment Act. Our goal would be longer term to go in and try to negotiate a lower rate in our contracts for prompt payment for those that go through the vendor payment program. We recently were given the green light to look into that, so that's something that we will be pursuing. But it doesn't really cost the state any different on interest. It's just a redirection to the assigned vendor that purchases that debt, and it's transparent to our vendors. And then the providers get paid timely, so they don't actually collect interest.
Okay. How are the vendors selected? I'm sorry, did you mention?
I should probably let somebody else address those questions. I'm not sure, but I know on the agenda the vendor payment program's the next item.
Mm-hmm.
Would it? We've got people that could address those questions more fully at that point.
Okay. But the bottom line, Senator, is they're vetted through CMS and the Comptroller's Office, and we look at financial and operational stability and simply approve them as an acquired purchaser. There's no agreement between the acquired purchasers and the state. We simply are allowing those vendors that are not receiving timely payments to proceed and assign that debt to the qualified purchaser.
What is the partnership with the comptroller? You mentioned the comptroller is also part of this process. What is their role?
To my understanding, it's as stipulated in the Prompt Payment Act and in the legislation that CMS and the comptroller together would manage the program.
Yeah, it's in the act. I'm saying maybe if you can sort of educate me. So what is the role? What is in the act?
I'll have to come back to you on it, if that's okay. I can come back with details on it. We did submit a letter this morning clarifying, answering some questions around that, but I don't think that was one of the ones we answered.
I might interject that CMS and the Comptroller's Office work together to establish the original rules. We have rules that govern the program in our that were approved by JCAR, and CMS administratively works with the vendor to administer the program, but the Comptroller's Office works with us to assign the vouchers at their office. So when a voucher goes over for an HMO, for example, we work with the Comptroller's Office, and then they assign that voucher to the vendor and reassign the payment in care of that vendor. So we work with them behind the scenes to establish the vouchering process. And it's not, the program isn't just for insurance, it's for all vendors that do business with the state that are eligible for prompt payment.
Thank you. And just a couple other things. One of the dependent verification audit. That was an audit that you guys had started. It was a couple years ago, and you suspended it. Can you tell us what the results were and what are you doing going forward?
For the first stages of the plan, we saved about $5 million. And we've got stage three, which I believe is state employees. State employees beginning in July, and then stage four is university employees, and that begins in September. And we forecast about $9 to $10 million of savings. And one critical element will be that we will allow them to give us a copy of their tax form without having to go to the IRS and get a transcript, which we think will make it more palatable to our folks. And then ongoing, we will try to make sure that we've got procedures in place that tighten up these requirements and make sure as people bring dependents on, we're requesting the same level of documentation. So we envision there'll be ongoing savings as well.
So this was an independent audit, correct?
This is an RFP that we did with a company that is performing this audit for us.
Okay. And how were they paid, or what were the parameters surrounding how they should be paid? Was it per every person that they verified on or off? And were you surprised by the results, or was it what you expected?
Hi, Pam Kogler with Benefits. The contract is $3.77 per dependent that we pay. So for all of the dependents that we had on the file at the time, which is about the same today, it was a $690,000 contract. And as Marcia said, we've already found about $5 million in savings from the first two groups. And we're hoping to find another $10 million with the next two groups that we do.
And that was based on what assumption you said, another $10 million. So what kind of egregious acts did you find in this audit that determined that they should be removed?
I don't think we found egregious acts so much. There were some people who had a spouse on that should have been dropped. And those we did go after and we looked into and reviewed and we made the necessary adjustments for those. I think a lot of people just dropped dependents that they didn't even realize they were covering. As you know, we have three categories for tiers for dependent coverage. We have member only, we have member plus one, and member plus two or more. Simply a guess is some of those people, once they saw the dependents they were carrying in the two or more because they weren't paying for those, simply dropped those. We have a space on the form for them to indicate the reason why they're dropping that dependent. Many people didn't complete the reason why they were dropping them, and that's a lot of children under 26 that were dropped.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I would add that we, like with everything we're doing right now at CMS, you might imagine we're taking a fresh look at all of our 10 bureaus and areas that we operate, and one of the ones that we brought in was a nationally known subject matter expert on compliance monitoring and fraud, waste, and abuse in healthcare programs. And so she is also probably due out at the end of the month or maybe at the end of June, kind of come back to us to say, here's your grade, here's where you can improve, here's where you're doing well. So we're taking a very serious look at all of those things to make sure that we don't miss any opportunities where people are intentionally or unintentionally, taking a benefit that they shouldn't take.
Do any other members have questions? I have some, but I want to give every other member a chance first. If you come up with a question, please just let me know to be recognized. Appreciate, Director, you being here and your staff very much. Would like to direct just a few more questions. And if you said this, I missed it, but when asked about the adjusted delayed payment cycle or extended payment cycle, it would probably get on the average to 14 months under your current plan. Is that correct?
With the savings that we've achieved and the downward trends we're seeing, it's at this point, I'd say it would be about 12 months if we didn't achieve any more savings. Okay. Currently, it's around 9 months.
Okay. I wondered where we were at now. So we'd go from 9 months to 12 months is your projection on payment cycle.
Originally, we forecast 14 months. Our goal is to keep all payment cycles under 12 months. At that point, we have provider network issues.
Okay. Appreciate your response on that. At some point here, and you've talked about different ways to achieve money, is there any place in any of our programs where we should be looking at an emphasis and maybe even a pilot project to start with on some healthy lifestyle, healthy activities, healthy eating, and volunteers for it? Perhaps they would benefit with a lower premium rate. I'm just raising the question, but have you looked at anything like that? And if you want more time to think about it, that's fine. But it just seems like we should incentivize trying to bring down some of these costs. Any thoughts on that?
We have not taken anything off the table, and we will send the committee the updated presentation that we referred to earlier, and you'll see in there a couple of dozen areas like that that we want to take a look at.
Okay, so it will be visited. Back to interest rate. What is the interest rate the state is paying on the delayed payments? And if you would address that, and if you need to divide it into types. So I didn't get my question answered on that, really.
The we have two payment interest acts that dictate our interest. It's timely payment, which is under the insurance code, and that applies to all providers across the state, no matter if they participate in our program or not. That's 9% interest after 30 days. And that is our self-insurance claims. That is HealthLink, Coventry, and Cigna.
Okay, so that's 9%. And how much are we paying in interest on an annual basis?
We are paying approximately $50 to $55 million in interest per year for timely payment. And prompt payment is for our HMOs and our capitated rates. When we have one voucher that we pay through the controller's office, and that is 12% interest after 90 days.
And how much is that annual cost?
That's about 45 to 50 million per year.
That alone is 45 to 50. So 100 million altogether in interest.
Correct.
Now, when we're going to extend the payment cycle, are we increasing our interest costs, or does the interest clock not start, or could you clarify that for me?
With our backlog, our interest would go up. We would be holding more bills. It would be under the same parameters as the original interest, but we would be holding it longer. So potentially our interest would be higher under that scenario.
So extending the payment cycle will add to our cost, potentially.
Yes, potentially. As does also when we get a supplemental, because we pay down so many claims. I think we had a supplemental in FY14, and our interest peaked because when we pay down those bills, we pay the interest along with it. So whether we pay them down more quickly or extend, you'll actually see different interest rates or interest payments under those two scenarios.
Okay, now we heard about some projected savings that have been achieved. Have you factored in the added interest cost? Or is that a takeaway from the projected savings?
The savings are in our backlog projections, and if we bring our backlog down, we would actually save interest. But our goal through this process is to try to keep our backlog stable.
But I understood it that the backlog is going to be extended.
It will be extended if we can't achieve these savings mm-hmm. in 16. But with some of the other trending downward that we're seeing and the optimistic viewpoint that we will be able to negotiate more quickly, we may end up at the end of the year being 100 or 200 million off, which won't really affect our interest greatly.
So, I mean, when we look at those savings, we need to be thinking about what we've done to interest. If we've added to cost, that could eat away at our, I mean, that's yet to be determined, but we will need to factor that in, correct?
Correct.
To be. Could we go to the vendor payment program, review that? And I'd like to ask first, under vendor payment program, some additional questions. Who are the current entities that have been selected to participate in the vendor payment program?
So there are currently six qualified purchasers. There are the Vendor Assistance Program, the Capital Access Program Trust, PayPlant, Muni PayMe, Vendor Capital Finance LLC, and Capital Restoration Fund.
Okay, so we have six.
Correct.
Have you provided the commission with copies of those contracts? Would that be possible?
We don't have a contract with those, with the purchasers. We vet them and let them participate in the program.
Is there something in print that gives out details or an agreement or?
We can certainly send you the terms of the program.
Okay. You will get that.
I think that'll answer your question.
Okay, good. If you would, for each of those, the terms of the agreement. Another question, what group insurance providers currently participate in the vendor payment program?
Coventry, Fidelity, and Health Alliance.
Okay, so it sounds like three?
Yeah.
I thank you for that. What receivables are vendors such as Vendor Assistance Program, Capital Access Program, Trust, Pay Plant, Muni, Pay Me, Vendor Capital Finance, Capital Restoration Fund financing? What receivables are those are out there on those?
Right. So right now, Vendor Capital Finance has received $108,000 in prompt payments interest. And has been assigned an additional $309,000. Oh, I'm sorry. $309,000, that's right. I'm going to check the number on it. For the assignments, I'll validate that number. It doesn't look right.
If you want to get back to the commission,
let me come back because we've got those numbers, but this one looks a little off.
No, we would appreciate that in a hard copy, whether it's email or whatever. Another question on the vendor payment program: how much money has been paid out over the last three fiscal years to vendor assistance program? Capital Access Program Trust, Pay Plant, Muni Pay Me, Vendor Capital Finance, Capital Restoration Fund. And what percentage of the monies paid out over the last three fiscal years in the vendor payment program has gone to the vendor assistance program? I can repeat that, or if you want that in print, we can get that to you, if that would be helpful.
Well, let us come back to you on the specific answer for that.
Okay, so we'll have staff get that question to you, if that'd be all right. Could we go to Medicare Advantage now? Does any member have any more questions? Medicare Advantage, what difficulties, if any, have you faced in moving Medicare-eligible retirees, dependents, over to Medicare Advantage plans? And have you received any useful feedback on this issue?
Hi. The first year it was very difficult because no one, including us, to be quite honest, really understood the programs and how they worked. I was one of the people that went out and did the presentations. I met some of you out there. Talking to the retirees, and there was just a lot of fear and confusion about the programs and how they worked, the cost. A lot of people don't understand the difference between, say, a deductible and out-of-pocket maximum. And that was a lot, to be frank with you. People would see $1,000 was their out-of-pocket maximum. and they would be very excited about that in a negative way, when really the deductible was only $100, which was their responsibility, and the out-of-pocket maximum of $1,000 was actually a protection for them. And once we went out and did those discussions and explained that, the whole tone would change, and people felt much better. So the first year we received about 40,000 calls during the open enrollment period last fall when we did it. And this is all calls that we received because we don't have a way with our phone system to differentiate between Medicare Advantage and other calls we receive yet. But we received about 14,000 calls total during the enrollment period last year. So that could have been someone like you calling on our traditional plans as well. So because of the time and also because of the materials we were able to put out last year to explain in the books that we put out, like we just did the benefit choice books. You may have seen a copy of the draft of this. This is for the traditional plans like you're enrolled in. So we have a similar book for the Medicare Advantage members that has, we put 5 pages of frequently asked questions in there to answer their questions. We addressed what I call the good, the bad, and the ugly, things that maybe no one understood or knew the first time around and weren't really selling points, we put in there. You know, like there's going to be 2 deductibles. Unfortunately, when you go from a fiscal year plan to a calendar year plan, it's just the way it works that first year. And so that was put in there. We were upfront about it and other things. And to be honest, we have a lot of people who really like the plan. There's always going to be people who say, I wanted to keep the quality care plan. It's the plan they had their entire life. It's what they're used to. They liked it. And this is change. And, you know, face it, nobody likes change. And the older we get, the harder it is, I think. But as far as these plans, they've really adjusted well. And I'll tell you, our TRIP and SIP members want to get into these plans. Their premiums are so much more reasonable under these plans versus the traditional plans that they want to get in prior to the open enrollment period in the fall. And we only do enrollment once a year, and that's mostly for administrative purposes. But to answer your questions, I think the biggest thing was just fear of the unknown and not understanding the plans.
I appreciate your response, and it sounds like part of it's also a clear, well, you said not understanding it, so a better, clear explanation of what was available, what they would be receiving. So I think that's the feedback is when they understand, there's been some positive feedback, apparently.
Yes.
Appreciate your response. One more question I have, and then if any other member has one. What is the status of the retiree contribution money held in escrow that is to be returned to the retirees after the Conorva decision by the Illinois Supreme Court? So what's the status of that? And then how much was withheld and how much, if any, has been refunded?
Approximately $63 million in total was withheld, combination of the Conorva Trust Fund and what was left in the Health Insurance Reserve Fund. We're required by the court order to refund the money by June 15th. June 15th, so currently we're calculating the interest that will be due. We have to allocate the attorney fees when those are settled, and then we will finalize, and the refunds need to be back by June 15th.
Okay, so nothing has been refunded, but it's obviously it takes a lot of bookwork, a lot of calculation to figure out how much.
Correct. We're working with our programming staff and all of the retirement systems very closely, and we have hit every one of our required time frames so far.
Question I should know the answer to. I'm sorry I don't. How many different people does this involve? What kind of numbers are we talking?
In total, we've got about 88,000 retirees in the state program.
And then you will have itemized attorney figures, attorney fees as a separate expense that has to come out?
That's correct.
Okay. Any other member? Senator Heberson.
Thank you. That's the question on the Medicare Advantage plan. Is there any difference in the payout? I mean, normally in a Medicare Advantage, you're going to have discounts for staying in network. but this is an open network. So even though it's an Advantage plan, they can go anywhere. Is there any savings between those that were staying in the network versus not in the network, even though the coverages were the same? Does that make sense?
I think so. So you're referring to the United Healthcare PPO plan specifically because they have a network behind the scenes, but it's called a passive PPO. Our members can go see any provider as long as they take Medicare. Whether they're in United Healthcare's network or not, the member doesn't even need to know that. It pays the
right.
same, and the state pays the same per member regardless.
Okay, so the cost is the same to the state?
Correct.
And that's on a capitated rate with these yes. carriers then?
Yes, they're all fully okay. insured with a capitated rate per enrollee.
Would there be any savings if you didn't have passive versus?
It depends on the plan design. I suppose it could. United Healthcare is here, and we could ask specifically to them.
We can get that later, though.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator, did that complete your questioning? Senator Trotter?
I have one on clarity. So as you're redoing your plan, the out-of-pocket expenses to the enrollees, from the way we've looked at it, they will go up substantially. Is what have you done to address that?
Are you in achieving our $700 million in savings
yeah.
and looking at plan redesign?
Right.
Well, that's where we really want to try to reduce our overall liability, because that reduces our costs and out-of-pocket costs. Even though it's a longer time frame, that's really our biggest goal, is to look at things we can do that reduce the overall liability. And that would be, you know, networks, driving better discounts, maybe looking at centers of excellence. Beyond that, if we change our plan design and look at our actuarial value, at the end of the day, our members could be picking up more out-of-pocket costs to help defray the state's portion of the overall funding.
Okay, so have you factored in what percentage that may be? And when you say at the end of the day, which day? Day 933, or are we talking about day after tomorrow? When would they start seeing these out-of-pocket expenses diminish?
Well, for plan design, of course, it's subject to bargaining, but it would be more of an 18 to 24-month time frame. And so at that point, after we went out for bid and knew what our costs would look like, what was agreed to in collective bargaining, we would know the actuarial value that we would land at. And if we can do these other things to decrease our overall liabilities in general, and establish a high deductible plan where we can help consumers make better choices, then we might see our overall liability reduce. And out-of-pocket may go up, but not as much as you would expect based on our current premium levels, because our current premium levels are actually very high. They're very above average. And so what we need to look at is bringing those overall liability numbers down.
Timing is everything, as you're aware, and it's easy for us to bandy about, you know, there's going to be some savings. But, of course, to the consumer, those savings never come soon enough. So it's very important that as we go forward that we try to keep these things realistic in the minds of individuals that are actually being impacted upon them.
We also are looking to leverage other state funds and federal funds. We want to make sure that where you reside as a payroll personnel person is truly covering your cost for group insurance. Sometimes I think the GRF lump sum is a little convenient for folks, and so we want to look at enhancing our revenues and leveraging our other funds appropriately. And the savings that we've achieved already and those revenue enhancements will not harm our members. Those savings will be spread to the state and to our members. So some of the things we've already achieved will actually reduce our overall liabilities for everybody without any kind of cost shifting.
I do want to just add, Senator, that you know this is part of the migration conversation that we had earlier, and I know you understand this, that at the real savings on an individual basis is going to be, I'm going to now take a lot harder look at which plan I'm on and make sure that I've got a plan that is affordable to me and still supports my family. Today, we have a very rich program in the 90% actuarial value called the Platinum Program in the vernacular of PACA. Now, a lot of people simply don't really need that. But they choose that because they're familiar with it or that's what they've been doing over time. I think that the migration is where you're going to see a significant amount of individual savings about what's coming out of my check. It's because I chose a different plan, perhaps a silver level program, that still does everything I need for it to do for my family and myself.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? And I just want to tell the members, as soon as we're done with CMS, we're going to go to Cigna, and we will open the roll if you're going to have to leave, we want you to have an opportunity to vote on extending that contract. So we're still on CMS. Representative Burke, did you have a question?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You spoke about leveraging federal funds and other state funds for employee health care costs and retiree health care costs. Can you elaborate on what those funds would be and what the leverage is that we could use?
Well, currently we have a lump sum for general revenue fund and a lump sum for road fund, and all other funds in our budget have a direct group insurance appropriation. Sometimes what we find is if an employee goes on leave, let's say, and we're still picking up some of their group insurance costs, agencies will move them to a GRF payroll, and then GRF lump sum is then covering them, and when they come back to work, they flip back over. So some of those types of things. Looking at universities, making sure that we're getting appropriate revenues for university employees. We'll be looking at this as part of the new federal law because now contractual employees, seasonal, there's other categories of employees that could be eligible for insurance. So we'll have to consider that as well in those funding sources.
So with the universities, are you saying employees who are paid through a federal grant, making sure that the grant money is also covering the benefit costs?
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Any other members seeking recognition? Senator Severson.
Sorry, just one follow-up. You had mentioned that you thought there was going to be savings by individuals moving to a bronze plan, those who are younger or having less claims. But if they're going to be paying less premium in and they're a group that's not having claims now, where is the savings going to be? If we're self-funding and these are people that aren't having claims and you're going to move them into a plan that they're still not going to have claims but they're going to be paying less premium, where does that savings come from?
I just let me clarify. I was referring to the savings for the individual. If I was paying a premium of $800 a month and I choose a plan that only has a premium of $400 a month, I've migrated from one plan to another. That's what I was talking about.
Okay, so the individual is going to save. The state's not going to be saving from doing that. Okay, that's one mic. Thank you.
Senator, do you want to have a vote on Cigna? We're going to move to it as soon as we're done. And just thank you. Any other questions for CMS? Director, your staff, thank you for being here. Thank you for your answers to questions, and then also any that we need additional information on for being willing to provide this. So we really appreciate your help. Thank you.
Senator Staines, you want a motion to open the roll? Okay, there's a motion on the floor to open the roll for, where are you? For the approval of the group insurance contract pursuant to 5 ILCS 375/5, I make a motion to recommend approval of the proposed one-year extension of the Cigna contract for FY26, 2016. Seconded by Representative Poe. Is there leave? Senator, there's leave to open the roll. Their leave has been granted. The roll call, co-call, Senator Staines, you vote yes. Okay. But we'll continue with it, but it's just open the roll call for the votes so she can leave. So thank you very much. Any others have to leave at this time? Thank you very much.
At this point, we would like for Representative Cigna to come to the table. And this is a general statement for everyone that will be testifying, which is as follows. If any vendors have any pending regulatory issues with any state agency or are under any investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state Attorney General's office, please state that during your testimony. Just asking all that to make that statement. Do we need to get Raymond on the phone? And with that, Cigna.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Debbie Robertson, Cigna Healthcare, National Account Executive. We do not have any pending regulatory issues, Department of Insurance complaints, or lawsuits at this time. We are the self-insured administrator for the Quality Care Health Plan. And with that, in the interest of brevity, I'll answer any questions you might have for me.
Do any members have any questions? I'll lead off with one, and please let me know if you have one. What is the length of the current claims hold for preferred providers and non-preferred providers? Current length of current claims hold.
It's 273 days for PAR providers and 350 days for non-PAR providers.
Thank you.
Well, if you could just elaborate, what is the dollar amount of those claims?
The total hold is $321 million.
Okay. Has any of these claims affected your responsibilities on the contract, and particular to physicians and hospitals in your preferred provider network?
No, it has not.
Okay. And have any of these issues with providers asking people for payments up front been a problem? There's been, as we pointed out, anecdotal information that some providers have been asking for full payment up front, or in some cases a partial payment. Is that policy, and have you heard that as well?
Contractually, our providers can ask for the member liability up front, so their deductible or coinsurance, but they are not supposed to ask for the payment that the state would make up front.
Okay. Again, it's been anecdotal. I guess there are no written complaints. However, if written complaints are received, how do you go through that process, and what is done?
If we are made aware of that, we contact our provider relations, and they go out and speak with the physician directly. So we do handle it on a one-on-one basis if it's brought to our attention.
Okay, so there are no official sanctions that would happen. It's just we're making the assumption that this is just bad information that the provider had or an act that was done, but not with any kind of malicious intent or fraudulent intent.
Yes, sir.
Given that. Yeah. Thank you.
Other members with questions? If there are no other questions, we'll proceed with the roll call. It's an open roll call, and we're going to hold it open, even though we'll finish up with your questions. Representative Neckritz asked, she had to leave. She was here, and she wanted to be on the roll also. So if the clerk would continue with the roll call.
Representative Burke. Yes. Senator Kaler. Co-Chair Moffitt.
Yes.
Senator Murphy. Representative Neckritz. Representative Poe. Representative Riley. Senator Rose, Senator Staines, Senator Severson, Senator Trotter, Representative Yunus. We have seven yeses.
We have seven yeses, and we will hold the roll open until we get ready to adjourn the meeting. But are there any other questions for Cigna? If not, we thank you for your participation and being
here. Thank you.
Now we'd like to call up representatives for the Vendor Assistance Program. Proceed.
Good morning. My name is Brian Hines, and with me is Patrick Dougherty. I'm the founder of Vendor Assistance Program, LLC, and Patrick is our Vice President of Marketing. And I turn it over to questions from the Commission.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you give us some details on how the Vendor Assistance Program works?
Sure, sure. It's actually our company is called Vendor Assistance Program LLC. The state's program is the Vendor Payment Program.
Okay.
The Vendor Payment Program has been around for several years, and it is a program that is voluntary for vendors that qualify for prompt payment penalties. If they so choose, they can participate in the program. They would go on to the state's website, and there's a list of six qualified purchasers, of which we are one, and we were the first qualified purchaser. And those vendors then can assign the receivables to us. The vendors get 100% of what's owed to them in terms of their invoice amount, and we get the penalty payment that the state would otherwise owe to the vendor when the state makes payment in full.
How large is that pool of individuals that are waiting that actually come to you, six vendors?
Sure. As CMS testified to, the amount ebbs and flows throughout the year based on cash flow with the state. We have had, to date, we have purchased receivables from several hundred vendors totaling over $560 million. The vast majority of the vendors that we have purchased from are small businesses, and we've had upwards of $180 million on the street at any given time. To right now, we have about $20 million on the street. On the street, I mean, in purchases that are current.
Okay. How long do you have to wait on an average to be paid on a voucher from the state?
Yes, it varies from different the general revenue fund to the different funds. The real estate fund for the state, for example, pays on about day 115 or 120. You've heard testimony today of the health group health insurance, is paying well past day 240 or 273, I think, as was testified today. So it varies on the type of receivable we buy.
And you mentioned how long have you guys been in operation? And
yes, we actually worked with the state of Illinois in coming up with a concept and coming up with a program, developing it with the state. That actually began in 2010. We then worked with the Department of Central Management Services in the fall of 2010 to do a pilot program with them. In 2011, 2012, we worked jointly with the Department of Central Management Services and also the Office of the Illinois Comptroller to do two things. One, they promulgated rules through JCAR that were passed unanimously that would set out the program terms that any qualified purchaser would have to do in order to buy these receivables. And then also CMS and the Comptroller's Office entered an intergovernmental agreement between the two to govern the program. So we've been around since 2010, but the program really started to grow in early 2013.
Thank you. And possibly you can ask the question I asked earlier of CMS. What is the comptroller's role?
So the comptroller pays the bill. So again, we worked with them to promulgate the rules. CMS works with the different agencies to get the vouchers assigned. They then send it to the comptroller's office, and then the comptroller pays it.
Thanks, Martin.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Does any other member have any questions regarding the vendor assistance program? If not, we thank you for being here. Appreciate your participation and response.
Thank you.
Next, we will go to ongoing health contracts, and just a brief report. These will move pretty fast, but Senator Kaler, we're holding the roll open on extending the contract for Cigna, and we agreed to hold it open until we adjourn because Representative Deckert had specifically said she was going to try to be back. There are seven affirmatives. And so we have to, if you would like to vote on that, if the clerk wants to acknowledge Senator Kaler's vote. Thank you, Senator. And now we'll call up response for the ongoing health contract. And first would be Blue Cross Blue Shield, HMO, Illinois Blue Advantage.
Good morning.
State your name.
My name is Sandra Gonzalez, account executive for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois.
Could you give us a brief summary of where you're at, any questions you have for the commission or for the state, and just anything you think that we should know and what services you provide, and just a brief summary of what you do?
I manage the State of Illinois HMO account, one of our largest. The state is one of our largest HMO accounts, and basically have been managing the account for about 5 years, working closely hand in hand on helping the state also participate in wellness events and wellness health fairs to try to educate the State of Illinois employees on knowing what kind of tools are out there to do preventive screenings, you know, annual exams, breast examinations, and so forth.
I appreciate that. That was one of the questions we had for CMS and one of the things they're looking at.
Right.
But I really appreciate the it's being proactive, the preventative, and this doing things to try to prevent certain problems. So wish you the best on that. I hope it's been successful. I hope it becomes even more successful. Really appreciated CMS's response and interest in it, too.
Right. We do hold campaigns throughout the years for wellness alerts and email blasts and send out wellness information and try to entice, you know, members to participate in, you know, in rolling up in some of the tools that we have that will help them make some informed decisions about their health.
Is there any way that you see that the state could incentivize do something to incentivize participation in a voluntary program, but first I think the insured needs to see what the advantage is, and then believe that it's that there are huge benefits.
I think it's really excuse me, educating the members, the employees out there, and what's out there for them at no cost to them. There's some great those who like to use the internet. We do have a Blue Access for members that has a whole slew of wellness information out there for not just them, for also for their families. On the importance of, you know, getting, you know, checked, you know, every year, and on, you know, the wellness is a part of the ACA as well, and there's so many things that I feel employees just need better education on. It's just getting the message out there.
Great. Well, keep up that effort. Any other questions from any member? If not, we thank you. I want to apologize. We do have one question.
Sure.
It may turn into two questions. How has the claim hold issue affected your responsibilities under the contract?
We are not holding any claims. We just continue to pay the claims. There's no hold.
There's no hold.
Right.
And what is the delay at this point? I mean, what's the time? What's the
the turnaround for claims?
Turnaround time.
30 days. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Is this regarding payment? There is 90 days to 120 days delay.
Okay.
In payment.
Are you calling it a delay or just simply turnaround time?
Right.
Is that pretty typical? Is that what it's been for quite a while?
It has, yes.
It hasn't extended or gotten longer?
And if it does, we do extend the grace period. We usually ask for approval, and it's usually granted. We understand that the state sometimes has some difficulties with, you know, making the payments.
Have you recently renegotiated any rates with CMS, or has it been on a continuum, or has there been a change?
We do renew each year. And yes, we recently did renew the contract, a renewal.
But it was an annual renewal that had been anticipated.
Correct.
Okay. And this time, I think we're finished.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And if Health Alliance would come up, again, the one question was for everyone coming up, and we'll make this as brief as possible.
Hi, good morning. My name is Lori Cowdery-Benso, Senior Vice President and General Counsel with Health Alliance. I've been there approximately 12 years. Health Alliance has enjoyed over 35-year partnership with the state. I also have with me Sinead Rice-Madigan. She's our Executive Director of Government Programs. I'll give her a chance to introduce herself. We look forward to continuing our partnership with the new administration and have had several meetings with Governor Rauner's staff. We have over 84,000 lives currently enrolled. We have no pending regulatory issues or Attorney General investigations. We also have a wellness website and look forward to working with the state for possible solutions in regard to wellness, including things like reduced co-payments, perhaps dollar incentives, which I know is kind of tough with the economy at this point. Like Blue Cross Blue Shield, we're not holding any payments to our providers at this point. We're about 8 months behind with about a $335 million receivable to date. So I'll give Sinead a chance to introduce herself.
I'm Sinead Rice-Madigan, Executive Director of Government Relations, and Lori covered it.
Happy to answer any questions.
Any members? Senator Severson.
Yeah, just wanted, maybe not just for you, maybe for all the managed care ones. When we're talking about implementing wellness benefits or ways of changing behavior, when you come up with any of those ideas, you also include looking at negative incentives as opposed to positive incentives. I think we found in the industry that positive incentives usually don't work.
Right.
The people who do positive incentives are the ones who are already going to do those things.
Right.
But the negative incentives, especially those that have certain risks, that if there are penalties in place, mm-hmm. if you're diabetic and you don't go in for your annual checkups or you don't do your blood tests, that you're charged a higher premium.
Yep.
Something that drives that behavior that we find has much better results and does have savings, but that may be something would have to be part of the negotiations with Ask Me to do that. But at least we've found that negative incentives are going to drive much better outcomes. So are those some things that could be looked at when we're in that negotiating? What kind of negative incentives do you think would help drive better outcomes that we could include in part of that negotiations?
It's actually probably covered most of the things that we do, including asthma. You know, if you don't participate in, you know, the wellness coaching with asthma or diabetes or heart and, you know, all kinds of issues like that, then you receive a negative incentive. And we do that with many of our other commercial plans. So we agree those are some ideas that we have provided to the state during the union negotiations. So like you said, a lot of those types of negative incentives will have to be negotiated.
Okay, but you are sharing with that with CMS, and
yes,
so those are also being looked at as part of the overall plan.
Right, and some employer groups also do it around smoking cessation. You get a lower premium if you aren't a smoker, and you attest to that, or they can also do testing around that as well.
Right, okay. Thanks. If we can go through that, and maybe if CMS, part of those discussions, when you're looking at those list of potential negative incentives, that if you can let us know what's being considered or what's going to be part of that negotiations, I'd be interested in knowing that as well. All right, thank you for being here.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Severson. Now Senator Trotter.
Thank you, sir. In regards to the vendor payment program, are you currently using that program?
Yes, we have used the vendor payment program. We've sold over the course of the last couple of years about 9 payments to the vendor assistance program. But we're not current. We don't have any current receivables with the vendor assistance program at this point.
Okay. So how does that work for your company?
Here's how it works. Where the voucher comes in, we decide to sell it. We receive 90% of that payment up front, and then when the state actually pays that voucher, then we receive the additional 10%, and then the vendor assistance program is paid any of the outstanding interest that's due on that receivable.
And why did you choose this form of payment?
Our delay probably about six years ago started out to be about 4 months, and then it's fully extended. So in order to assist with cash flow and try to avoid delaying payments to our providers, which as one of the other vendors, I think Cigna testified, it could potentially end up with provider dissatisfaction with our network. So we're trying to avoid that timely payment issue with our providers, so we've taken advantage of the vendor payment program.
So this is a better way of doing business for you?
Yes.
As you saw going forward. Okay. And how do you select your vendor? What choices? You had 6 choices.
Yeah, I believe there's 6. I don't recall that there were 6 choices at the time that we started using the vendor assistance program, and we negotiated our contract with the vendor assistance program. And it's a lot of work to go through to negotiate that contract. So we've chosen to use that program at this time.
Okay, and they're all good characters.
Yeah, as far as I know.
As far as you know.
We
have one. I would assume so.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any member have any other question? One quick one I have. I don't believe that you've been asked, and I missed if you did. Have you also renegotiated rates with CMS? Is that an annual procedure for you?
Yes. We recently did negotiate that. It's annually for FY 2016. It starts in July.
And was there any change?
Yes, there was a change. There was a small increase.
A small increase. Mm-hmm. What percent?
I'm not sure if we're allowed to publicly state what our overall increase is. I think it's confidential information.
We're good at keeping secrets.
We could submit that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to have Coventry come up now. Thank you, Health Alliance. In Coventry, we've been talking HMO, and I believe you're HMO and open access both, if my understanding is correct. So you can address both issues at this point.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Frank D'Antonio. I am the market president for Coventry Aetna. We have over 25,000 state employees and their family members that are part of our 3 different programs, actually, that we offer to the state. We offer a fully insured HMO program, a self-funded OAP program, and we're also offering our Medicare Advantage program. Senator Severson's comments about wellness and incentivizing, I will tell you that our struggle over the years has been what I call a term a call to action, getting people to take advantage of the free incentives that are there. We do offer online wellness, different sorts of coaching programs, all those sorts of things. But really it comes down to is it the carrot or the stick approach. And different employers are going to take different approaches to that. From your perspective, I think the best way to look at it is what can and can't you do? As a state entity, you may have a little different rules than, you know, the private sector. But what has happened with other sorts of employers is they have either through contributions out of the paycheck, adjusted contributions up if people weren't participating, down if they were. Smoking cessation programs, if you're a smoker, there's been different sorts of programs there that smokers cost more than others. And, you know, there's kind of a year corrective period where people can take advantage of that. Maybe the first year they enroll in the program, and if by the end of that period then they quit smoking and have proof of that, then their rates go down. So there's different sorts of programs that are available. The real question is how do we work together to figure that out? And it is a challenge. There's no two ways about it. On our fully insured HMO program, yes, we do participate in the VAP. And how the VAP works for us, the vendor assistance program, is we do receive premiums on our fully insured membership about 90 days after the fact. We do not make any interest off of that, so all we receive is our premium. We go ahead and pay the claims from that premium. And if we technically look at it, it actually costs us as a carrier a little bit of money, because once we get into the mandated interest payments to providers, when we're getting payments over 30 days late, we actually have to pick up some of that payment to providers in interest. So that's on the fully insured side. Okay. On our self-funded OAP program, we do participate in the vendor assistance program, but only for the administrative fees that are paid. On the claim side, we do not participate with the vendor assistance program, and as of yesterday, we are funded through September 10th, 14 for claims, and the outstanding liability is roughly around $54 million. On the Medicare program, so you can save me a trip coming up later if you like, on the Medicare program, at this point we do not participate in the vendor assistance program. We're considering that. We're working with CMS to work through that program. And to the question of if we are under any investigations by the Illinois Attorney General's office, the answer is no. With that, I'll open it up to other questions that you have.
Questions from members? Senator Kaler.
I just have a comment, and it's not really a question to you, but kind of to all the groups out there. There is a way to get movement towards wellness and savings and programs, but it's called skin in the game. And years ago, I helped negotiate with the municipality and its eight unions where they took health care off the table as a negotiated item, set up a co-managed system of health care, and then agreed to do gain sharing. In other words, 50% of the savings went to the employees group to make a decision as to how they wanted to redirect those monies, and 50% went back to the city. And I'll just give you an example of how that works. So, for instance, plan design was controlled by the committee. They said, we will pay for two dental checkups a year. If you use zero of those, we will not pay for any more dental insurance, period. If you don't care about your teeth, we don't care about your teeth. So all you have to do is get skin in the game and have a co-management system, and you can achieve those savings.
Well, and I would agree with that. So I think Health Alliance mentioned different sorts of programs. And some of the incentives that are out there, too, is I think they were talking about diabetics. So if you're completing all your courses of treatment and you have office visits, you may have office visits, co-pays, that would be waived. That's an incentive to go see your doctor. It's an incentive to get your test done and toes and fingers and those sorts of things checked. There is a question you didn't ask that I'm supposed to answer. Yes, we just renewed for the upcoming fiscal year our fully insured HMO and our OAP program.
You just renegotiated the rates?
That's correct.
And did they have an upward trend or a downward trend or a sideways trend?
Slightly upwards, very slightly.
And we're to keep that a secret, right?
Well, until I leave, at least.
I didn't think anything was supposed to be secret in government, truthfully, but some upward cost. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your cooperation, too. HealthLink?
Good morning. My name is Mark Hagley, Regional Vice President for HealthLink, and with me is Susan Laney, the Account Manager for HealthLink. HealthLink has been a vendor for the state of Illinois since 2001 when we introduced the first open access program, which is a three-tier benefit program, as you probably know. We have approximately 78,000 members of the state of Illinois plan that use the HealthLink network, that carry the HealthLink logo on their ID card. A little bit about some of the things that HealthLink has done recently. We consistently work with the folks we work with at the state to introduce a whole host of concepts and ideas on cost containment, as well as all the things you've already heard, right, all the free programs that are out there. I would say the biggest challenge for us, like all the other vendors, it sounds like, is member engagement. So participation in the programs that are available. We support positive or negative reinforcement type programs, incentive-based programs. Our system can support all of those. I take a little step further. I mean, the real issue or the real opportunity for cost containment is in cost of care. And that's an easy attack. You can restrict the access to care. There are high and lower cost facilities, right, in the marketplace, high and lower cost providers that provide similar services across our network, and our system has the flexibility to support incentives and or redirection into those type of things, as well as, you know, you heard a little bit about closing the gaps in care, you know, identifying members that have gaps in care for chronic conditions and things like that are also very important to make sure that, you know, members are incentivized to close those gaps in care and make sure they're getting the care that they need to keep healthy. You've undoubtedly seen the statistics, you know, a managed diabetic, right, their cost is anywhere from $4,500 to $5,000 per year, but a non-managed diabetic costs anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000 a year. So those are very real and very impactful statistics that, you know, if people are compliant with both medications and their health condition, you can easily control cost. But again, I reiterate that, you know, we have the system flexibility to support eliminating, restricting, or taking providers out of our network that are higher cost providers, really at any employer or state's discretion. So, you know, if you as an employer or a customer of ours want to help eliminate certain providers that are high cost or help redirect members to lower cost providers, we can support that. I will note, right, we do not participate today in the vendor assistance program for our administrative fees. However, we're exploring it for the provider fees, for the provider's claims. As it stands today, HealthLink has about $223 million on a 31-week hold. We don't have any lawsuits. There's no acquisitions planned at this time. And I'll answer any other questions you might have.
Any questions from the members? Senator Trotter.
You're saying that these payments due, this is 31 weeks. Is that the longest that you've ever waited? Or
no, we've been to a 40-week delay.
I'm sorry?
We've been to a 40-week delay.
40, okay. So you said you're now thinking about working with one of these prompt payment. What is your goal when you get to 40 or before you get there? So what is your thinking process going?
I've been working on the program for some time with the vendor assistance people. We've had many meetings. We continue to outline some of the pieces. We're working on a contract currently So no, we're not waiting for additional delays. We are looking forward to it. The reason that we look at that is from a provider perspective. You know, we want to make sure that we can go out and negotiate additional deals, and when there's a delay, sometimes that creates some issues. So this is a win-win for us from our perspective as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, I have one for you. How are you going to choose which VPP program to work with?
We currently are working with the vendor assistance program, Brian, that was up here earlier. Mm-hmm. We have been working with him. We started this process probably over, probably 10 months ago, looking at all the different pieces, and we have outlined that when we move forward, that we will be utilizing his services.
And I think there are several options.
That's correct.
How did you select the one that you did? I mean, what criteria did you use?
Actually, it was reviewed by our legal and determined that it was the best option for us. I can get you that information if you'd like.
That'd be fine. And okay. you did look at all that were out there. And
we looked at some of the others. I wasn't aware that there were six. I didn't know that at the time, but there were others. I did receive phone calls from other vendor assistance people that were asking about our business as well.
Okay. Any other members? Thank you for your presence and your participation and your answers.
It's our pleasure.
Under Medicare Advantage plans, HMO, PPO, we have four. Would all four come up, which would be United Healthcare, Aetna, Humana, and Health Alliance? And Representative Nekritz, we have an open roll on voting to extend the contract for Cigna. And it's been eight yes so far, but we held it open because you had indicated. So you will vote how? How are you going to vote? Would you? Okay, if the clerk would acknowledge that vote, and thank you for being back. Okay, then the... The clerk would verify, I believe we have nine affirmative votes to extend the contract with Cigna. Thank you. And motion carries, and that would be closed. Now we have representatives then from United, if you would raise your hand, United Healthcare, Aetna, Humana, Health Alliance. And we thank you all for being here. Why don't we start out United Healthcare?
Good morning. My name is Dee Dee Rabach. I am the Strategic Account Executive at United Healthcare. We offer a fully insured Medicare Advantage plan to the retirees. We have approximately 112,000 members that we are currently insuring as a fully insured plan. And we partner with CMS managing those retirees. And we are actively engaged with the membership on wellness programs. We've had some really great success in 2014 and year-to-date 2015. So we are looking at gaps in care, making sure that we're closing those gaps in care, getting the members in the appropriate managed care, clinical programs when we do identify someone who has a gap in care. We also offered Benefit University last year where we went out and went to different locations throughout the state of Illinois. We brought in our clinical team, our pharmaceutical team. We also brought in our other services such as Silver Sneakers, High Health Innovations, and then we sent out invitations to all of the members within that area. So they were able to come in, get their biometrics, talk to our clinical teams, talk to our pharmacists, had some really good success there. We also provided a flu shot event last year, and we plan on doing that this year along with the Benefit University again. And any questions for you? We have no pending legal activity against United Healthcare in the state of Illinois.
Do any members have any questions? I have a, Senator Jim, I have a quick question. You mentioned silver sneakers. I think there's an age guideline on that. Is that correct?
Well, so we would, we are only offering coverage to the retirees, so the majority of those would be 65 and older. So if they're enrolled in our plan, they are eligible for silver sneakers.
Okay, and to avoid any appearance of conflict of interest about that program, I won't ask any more questions because of potential conflict.
Thank you.
On a serious note, you said you do sponsor flu shots, encourage people, or you said an event, flu shot event, I think, so they have
correct.
Available. Do you encourage shingles vaccinations?
Absolutely, and we do cover it under the plan.
But then you highly recommend it, I mean, over a certain age, I
absolutely.
Think.
Absolutely, yes, correct.
Again, I don't want to get into any conflict of interest on any of this. Any other questions? Okay. Yeah. Now, next would be, why don't we go with that in the next?
My name is Anna Dumahosky, and I represent Aetna Healthcare. We offer the Coventry Advantra HMO product for the Medicare retirees through the state of Illinois CHIP and TRIP programs. Our benefit plan is an HMO with low affordable copays for the members and a lot of promotion of health improvement services. We offer all members access to in-home health assessments, and we do promote members getting into primary care physician offices. In our service area, we believe in partnering with providers in order to help members receive the care that they need for both the preventive purpose, for both preventive purposes as well as for disease management. We support providers through our disease management and our case management programs as well.
Any questions? Then let's go to, thank you. Let's go to Humana for comments.
Good morning. I'm Harmony Harrington with Humana Corporate Affairs. We are proud to serve state employee retirees in 13 counties via our Medicare Advantage HMO. We currently have no state regulatory or litigation issues pending with the Illinois Attorney General. However, we are working with the U.S. Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney General on an investigation pending in Florida. I would like to introduce you now to our account exec, Nisha Williams.
Good morning. My name is Nisha Williams. I'm the account executive for the state of Illinois. Just to share with you some activities that we've had over the course of the past year with our retirees, you know, in the interest of helping our retirees maintain their health, we reach out to our retirees to let them know about upcoming vaccinations that they should have, such as the flu shot, about examinations that they should take, such as mammograms, and that's an ongoing effort throughout the year. For those retirees that are qualified for disease management programs, we take a holistic approach in, as to how we help them manage their care with their providers. We don't believe in one size fits all. Some people need more active outreach to the point where maybe they need somebody to come to their home and explain their disease in more detail, and others just need some telephonic assistance. In addition to the disease management and clinical programs, Humana has a program called Humana Vitality. The Humana Vitality program is kind of divided in two. We have one version of the program for our active membership, and then we have one version of the program that's been tweaked to comply with federal CMS for our Medicare Advantage members. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Any questions before we move to the next one, then we can just do group questions if there are any. So then now Health Alliance.
Hi, Lori Cadrivenso with Health Alliance. This is our first year, 2015, in participating in the Medicare Advantage with the state of Illinois, offering an HMO in 48 counties. We have a little over 900,000 lives enrolled in the program. We also offer the Silver Sneakers program and many of the other wellness and disease management programs I mentioned in a previous testimony. So I'm available if you have any questions.
Questions for the panel from members?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Across the board, have any of you received any feedback from Medicare Advantage participants on difficulties obtaining prescriptions, keeping and consulting their doctors, or obtaining services from their preferred medical facilities?
This is Anna Dumahosky from Aetna Healthcare. I think initially in 2014, the use of the card was new for them. Many of them showed up at the pharmacy for the renewal, didn't show their new card, but we quickly remedied and worked with CMS as well as the beneficiaries to make sure that that did work. Under the Aetna plan, we did specifically design a formulary with CMS to minimize disruption for the beneficiaries covered under our program. So I think the pharmacy program worked really well for them under our plan in the first year. This past year, it was even more seamless. Members are used to a lot of the new agent retirees were very excited about being able to join a Medicare Advantage program and the additional benefits that they would see as being part of a Medicare Advantage plan. And so they were much more willing to show their new ID card at the point of service. So from a pharmacy benefit perspective, I think things went very well in 2015.
And again, across the board.
And then for paying for providers, we do not hold any claims under the Medicare Advantage program. The vast majority of the premium that we receive in order to cover your retirees comes from Medicare. Medicare pays us on time every month. We pay our providers on time every month. And we pay in accordance with our contracts with providers as well. And we have a broad, very extensive network in the state of Illinois. A lot of providers work with us for any and all of our programs and are very familiar and comfortable with our claims billing processes, policies, and procedures. So there is no delay in payment for the Medicare Advantage members.
So, and no one else down there has had any delay in payments, and no money is owed by the state at this point.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of your statement.
I said there are currently no payments owed from the state at this point.
We do have, the state of Illinois does owe about half of the premium that's been billed year to date. We're currently running on approximately a 9-month lag for our premium payment. So, as Coventry mentioned, we are paying the providers as soon as we receive the claims because it's a fully insured plan, but there is a backlog of premium owed.
Ditto for United Healthcare. They're on approximately a 9-month premium lag, fully insured plan, so claims are being processed and paid. Providers are being paid.
So you knew that was going to be a problem going into this?
Yes. Yes, we did. We were aware of it.
Okay. No. Yeah. Thank you, Good Chairman.
Any other for this panel? Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. For the other providers, let's go three at a time. So let's bring up Delta Dental, Magellan Behavioral Health, and Express Scripts. It's those three. And if you, same format, identify yourself and any statements or information you'd like for us to be aware of.
So my name is Karen Gwagowski. I'm a vice president with Delta Dental of Illinois. We currently cover about 185,000 employees. The contract has been in place since July of 2011, extends till next July, so no rates have been renegotiated during that time frame. We are not under an investigation by any state department. However, we have initiated a lawsuit against a provider for billing irregularities, and that lawsuit is pending both for investigation and discovery.
My name is Darren Avant, and I'm the current account manager for the State of Illinois account.
Good morning. My name is Julie Billingsley. I'm an account executive with Magellan Healthcare. We administer the employee assistance program for the non-AFSCME Council 31 employees, as well as the behavioral health benefits for Quality Care Health Plan. We are not under investigation by any attorney general's office. We have no pending lawsuits, and we have no regulatory issues.
It's not on, right? If you would, turn it on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Donna Fleig. I'm with Express Scripts. We provide the pharmacy benefit management for the state of Illinois. We currently provide benefits for 175 members for or within the state. We do have no pending regulatory issues with the state of Illinois. However, we do have one pending issue with the state of New Jersey, which is under investigation. We have an outstanding accounts receivable balance of $168 million. That is a 40-week lag or 10 months for the state plan and 23 weeks for the teacher's retirement plan.
And I'm Tracy Young, Senior Account Executive with Express Scripts.
Thank you all. Questions from the members?
Thank you, Co-Chair. Again, across the board, how long are current claim, are your current claim holds, and has it affected your responsibilities under your present contract?
The current claim hold for the largest group, which is the Quality Care Dental Plan, is 11 weeks for network providers and 25 weeks for non-network providers. And the plan is a self-funded plan, so claims are paid as funds become available.
Okay, thank you. Have any of you had issues with providers asking people for payments up front?
On dental, we've had that issue with non-network providers. Network providers are not able to request payment up front, only their required deductibles.
Okay. So is that considered a violation of your contract?
Correct.
Okay. And what have you done to deal with the situation?
When those instances occur, we reach out to those providers to remind them of their obligation by contract, and the matter is resolved that way.
Okay. Just from your answer, it sounds like this has happened on several occasions, or is it an anomaly?
I would say this has occurred most frequently at the onset of the contract. I have not heard of many instances since that time. I think it was a matter of there just being an education process with providers learning how to manage the state account for the employees.
Okay. This is, I'm assuming, probably for Express Scripts. Have state employees, retirees, dependent participants in your program been unable to obtain prescriptions under your coverage?
No,
and
they have.
And if so, why is this occurring?
No, they have not been denied any coverage. Express Scripts does fulfill the prescriptions. The payment issue is an issue between Express Scripts and the state, and it causes a cash flow issue, but no provider issues whatsoever.
What percentage of your prescriptions are filled by mail services?
We'll have to get back, but we believe it's about 15%.
15%. And what percentage of your prescriptions are filled using generic medications?
82.5%.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Other members? Thank you, Senator. If there are no other questions, we thank you for your attendance and participation and answers. We would like to bring up iMed and Connect Your Care next. And then go ahead and let's have Minnesota Life come up also. And if I'm Ed, why don't you lead off, followed by Connect Your Care.
Hi, I'm Natalie Mason, Assistant General Counsel with iMed Vision Care. We're not currently under pending investigations or have pending complaints.
Nick Cincy, National Account Executive with iMed. I actually manage the relationship on the account.
This is Becca Nix with Minnesota Life Insurance Company. We don't have any pending regulatory issues against us, nor are we under investigation by any Attorney General.
Hi, Dan Sejora with Connectors. Pending account and depending.
about 14,000 members on the FSA.
Same format, just questions across the board. Well, this is more specific to IMED. What are the percentage of utilization of your services been over the past 3 years, and do you feel that employees have a sufficient knowledge of vision benefits?
Over the past 3 years, utilization has been right between 15 and 16% for both the eye exam and materials.
Okay. As far as members actually having enough knowledge of their benefits, how good is that?
For a employer-sponsored plan, or in this case an employer-paid plan, that's typically within line with our book of business. Typically you see about an 18 to 19% utilization. Obviously when we talk about a voluntary plan, it's completely different. I do not think it's due to lack of knowledge. We do have both a custom website and enrollment site for the members to gain education.
Okay. Thank you. And for all members, how has the claims hold issue affected your responsibilities under this contract, under your present contract?
We don't have any claims hold with a life insurance company.
And from an IMED perspective, we do not.
Have a problem either.
Can you define the claims hold process or definition?
Basically, the payments that we the state holds you.
Okay, so if they're payments to the providers, then Connecture Care and the state employees are affected, especially on the dental and vision side, where you know, providers are looking to be paid, and the members. Typically only supposed to be using their FSAs for valid medical expenses that are not covered by the health plan. And so the providers are pressuring them to pay, the members want to pay, and Connecture Care is kind of caught in the middle with, you know, the members can use their card, it is their money out of their FSA, but we want to make sure that we're upholding to the IRS regulations. So, you know, tracking down paperwork, receipts, explanation of benefits, explanation of payments, puts a little bit of a burden on the members that they're not quite familiar with. It's confusing, it's frustrating for them, so there is an issue with that.
Questions specifically, Senator Stevenson.
Yeah, just a couple questions along those lines with that. If someone submits a billing early before it's gone through the adjudication of the claim, you don't pay that yet, then you would wait until they get that, or you would determine what the insurance was supposed to pay, and then you would just pay what the member's liability would be?
Right. It depends on the method the member notifies Connecture Care. They have a payment card in their wallet, so if they're at the provider's office and the provider demands payment, the member can pay then. Or typically, the provider will wait several months, and if they still have not been paid, they will pressure and threaten collections, et cetera. So the member, those payments will be made to the provider when the card is used. The other alternative is members can submit claims for reimbursement with Connecture Care. And in those cases, we will not reimburse the member until we receive the proper documentation.
See, they use their card for their copay. Normally, they would use their card for the copay portion of it, and then you don't need, if it's a standard copay, you don't need documentation. But if it's more than that, then you're going to put a hold on that until you get that information.
Exactly. And 90%. And let me just clarify: 90% of claims are paid automatically and do not require the substantiation. So it is a small percentage, but to those members, it's a big issue.
Now, did you mention there, you said it was 14,000?
14,000 FSA participants.
That's all the number is? 14,000?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's...
Yeah, so this is our first year. This is our first year, Connecture Care working with the state. So we are ramping up and very willing and able to help participate in the open enrollment period coming up for July 1st. So we are working with the state on ways that we can help make members aware of the benefits of this program and help them get engaged?
Well, it's a huge tax savings for the employees, so it's unfortunate that the number is so low. Do you know what the number that don't use it at the end of that, do you have a 90-day carryover? Is that what you're...
Right, there is a 90-day...
So that's the 90-day period. Do you know what that number is that's unused?
For the state, we do not. Again, this is our first year, so we haven't hit that period with this population yet.
Okay. And then will the contract then state at the end of that 90 days or, that money would revert back to the state then?
The state does allow for a $500 rollover. It was a recent regulation passed last year. Right.
Okay. So anything over that 500, that would revert back to the state?
Yes, sir.
At that point? Okay. That's the other question I had. And the limit this year is there a dollar limit that we put on it?
I believe it's $2,550.
Okay. All right. Okay. I appreciate your help. Thanks, Annette.
Thank you. And one final question. This is to Minnesota Life. What percent of State of Illinois employees purchases additional life insurance through Minnesota Life?
Approximately 40 to 50%. It depends. Correctional facilities, Department of Transportation, those guys are very high users. We've got about 75%. But overall, we have about a 45%.
Yeah. Any further questions you may have? Jim? Thank you very much.
Any other members? Any questions? Thank you to our panel and to the members. This has completed our agenda. Other than a motion to adjourn, Representative Nekritz moves to adjourn. Is there a second? Senator Trotter, all in favor say aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries and the meeting is adjourned.